The unexamined life is not worth living.
I think people just really hate the other side. And I think that people need to actually get off Twitter and have a beer with somebody from the other side and say, oh my God, I didn't know you liked TV too. Oh my God, we share the same football team.
This is Cross Examine Life, the place where you're encouraged to ask more questions. The format is cross-exam, and the subject is chosen by the guest. Join us as we elevate the art of disagreement, unpack assumptions, and challenge beliefs, one question at a time.
Welcome to episode 55 of the Cross Examine Life podcast, the show that improves the way we disagree with one another. I am your host, Chris Tatum, and you'll love this episode if you enjoy conversations about how we set boundaries within social media in 2020 and beyond, what factors cause words to be classified as political or not, and whether social platforms are more accurately considered private media or public forums. Recently, listeners have been saying really kind things about Cross-Examine Life online. Ote Takara recently said on Facebook, "I just listened to two episodes and loved them both. You actually have a podcast I want to create." We really appreciate your kind words. And if you share them on Facebook or in a review, we might share them on a future episode. This episode is sponsored by LukeRaffertyVisuals.com. If you're looking to take your organization, your brand, your messaging to the next level, reach out to Luke for help with your next photography or video project. If you mention Cross Examine Life, you'll receive $100 off your first video project. Send me a text message, leave me a voice message talking about what you find interesting on Cross-Examine Life. You can do so at 307-240-9190, or you can drop a message on Facebook in the Cross-Examine Life community. By way of brief background, in 2019, some social media platforms were evaluating whether or not to ban political ads. That year, Twitter took the controversial step of actually banning political ads. In light of that, Andrew came on Cross-Examine Life to argue what he does now, that Twitter should not ban political ads.
So my position is that Twitter should not be banning political ads. They're not doing anything illegal because they are a private company. So this is not a legal argument that I'm making. It's more of best business practices and best outcomes for the most freedom that we could have on the internet, because Twitter is... it's in a tricky situation where it's not a utility, but it also, to some degree, is a public forum on the internet. I recognize that Twitter is a publicly traded company that is private from the government. And so there's no freedom of speech violation by ad banning. Now, why I think it's bad is that, and I'm going to start on November 19th, between the hours of 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock on Twitter, trending was Devin Nunes is an idiot. Was trending for about 3 hours on Twitter. Now, that wasn't an ad. That was just breaking news. So I don't understand how they can ban candidate ads or issue advocacy ads when you legitimately have that tweet. And the way things get tweeted sometimes is that people schedule and do certain hashtags and have campaigns that are not ad-based campaigns. And if enough people do it, more people jump on it, and then it gets trending. I don't really get how banning an ad is going to do anything when clearly a hashtag of Devin Nunes is an idiot is going to be out there. I just think there's 15 ways around banning an ad, and that it doesn't make any business sense, where they're going to lose money, and all you have to do is just figure out how to organize 10,000 people to do a hashtag, which isn't that hard because you can legitimately do it in an email blast. Furthermore, Twitter can ban anybody they choose. They don't give a reason. There's going to be questions where people are going to be doing some type of ad, and then they're going to claim it's political. Like, if you're advocating for climate change, it might not allow you to have any political ads referencing climate change. But it might allow an oil company to put something out that goes directly against climate change. That's massively confusing to me and a lot of other people. Furthermore, this doesn't help anybody who's challenging for office. So when an incumbent is in office, they have massive advantages of male privileges and a variety of other things, as well as name recognition and donors, and they don't need to take a grassroots operation. One of the things about Twitter and Facebook, if you don't have money, you could reach a wider audience on those platforms for cheaper dollars, because digital ads are cheaper than television or door knocking or fundraising. And it actually helps challengers for office to defeat incumbents. So by taking away political ads on Twitter, you're actually taking away that power for people to challenge. And also, you're taking away a digital tool that a whole generation has grown up on. And I think that's a step backwards and not a step forwards. Secondly, between the years of 2015 to now, Trump's tweets, 80% of them have been news stories. And he has spent $0 on that. And according to The Guardian, that is worth about $2 billion worth of ads that he spent zero on. And so if you ban ads, people are going to get really creative and they're just going to rework the algorithm to do exactly what Trump did in the last 4 years of generating a huge amount of press from their tweets and grow their followings in a different way and then use that instead of using ads, but it's going to have the exact same effect. So I don't see how banning an ad is going to do anything. People go to values for Twitter and they go to tweet their values. Facebook is so much more generalized, and people go to their values to Twitter. And people are already tweeting what they feel and what they engage with. And so a political ad isn't going to hurt that. Being that they're a smaller audience, I think the political ads on Twitter are just going to more slide off.
When you say slide off, you mean be ignored?
Yeah, I think they're going to be more ignored than anything, because people's definitions on Twitter are more defined. On Facebook, people don't have defined definitions because you have a variety of interests. If you're following your favorite comic writer, you might not know their political position, but you know how they feel about Spider-Man. And so the ads, I think, aren't really going to define anything.
You mean they're not going to change people's minds?
Yeah, I think they're going to be ineffective.
If political ads on Twitter would be less effective because people already have their defined values and their minds are not likely to be changed, then isn't that a perfect environment in which to institute a ban on ads that generally studies and data suggests are not going to have any effect on their target audience? Isn't that a sort of ideal scenario in which to do it?
I guess they can do whatever they want. I think that Twitter ads are not completely ineffective. I think that a lot of them, in order to convince somebody on Twitter, it takes a lot more effort. So a candidacy ad versus a issue advocacy ad are two different things, and I'm going to explain that. So a candidacy ad says, vote for Nita Lowey. She did this policy. It's got a direct candidate involved. An issue advocacy ad is saying, no issue, but, you know, Democrats support the environment. That's not tied to one individual. And so I think issue advocacy can change people's minds.
And you don't want to see that shut down because you think that that's just as powerful or just as effective as, you know, what people could get trending via hashtags, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, the hashtag Devin Nunes is an idiot, I think it got like 50 or 60,000, you know, worldwide things. That must mean that every hour that it was up, it was getting that number, and it was hitting that number.
Let's break that down a little bit. I mean, why do you think people pay for ads in the first place, political or otherwise? Why are people paying for ads versus just posting content to Twitter?
So I pay for ads on Facebook, and I'm going to talk about that because I think it's similar. I pay because I want to get my thing out to people, and I don't want people to buy my podcast. So I advertise my podcast because I want more listeners. And so I think people want more exposure and they want to change the discourse. Obviously, if I'm advertising a podcast that's a friendly interview-based podcast, the consequences aren't high. There's no real stake involved except I'm trying to get somebody to listen to something fun.
Sure.
When we get into political ads, people want to, you know, get people to sign up, get people to sign petitions, get people to donate to their campaigns. So they want to convince somebody. Getting something hashtagged takes a lot of organization.
Isn't an ad like a shortcut to getting that social capital, if you don't have the groundswell of support, an ad is a quick way to get in front of a lot of people's eyes, right?
That's a good way to put it. And an ad is in conjunction sometimes with that
sure
hashtag to just further it out and increase the reach.
Yeah. The reason that you would pay in a Twitter-like environment for an ad is because you know your hashtag can only get so far, and to push its reach further, then you pay, right?
Yeah, and also Twitter is at the moment. For me, I'll tweet something out at a live event, and that's what Twitter is masterful at.
Right, right.
Facebook is a little bit more long-term. Instagram is somewhere in between. But that's the idea, is that you might want to generate something in the moment.
Right.
That's why, I mean, I'll say it this way. Devin Nunes is an idiot was trending during an impeachment hearing.
Yeah.
It would be absurd if it was trending during the World Series.
Right. I think maybe my underlying point and question is the fact that Devin Nunes is an idiot was trending was because there was a groundswell of support around that hashtag. A lot of people had that opinion and kept repeating that hashtag, right? I mean, it's not the case that someone in the background was pulling strings on Twitter by paying for an ad with that and that got it trending. It's actually that there was a groundswell of support for that hashtag. Isn't that true?
I can't prove it. And I could be wrong,
yeah.
But there had to be other support to get that thing up the ground.
I wanted to jump in here to congratulate Andrew on using a short phrase, I can't prove it and I could be wrong, that so many of us would do well to use before we start in with a new argument or making a point in conversation with others. Oftentimes, we think we have a firm grasp on the truth. We're pretty sure we read it somewhere, or we're pretty sure the thing we're saying adds up and makes sense. And sometimes we're right. Many times we're right. But sometimes we're not, right? It's always possible we could be wrong. There could be an alternate explanation we haven't thought of. So in recognition of that, and in order to add greater generosity and greater openness in your conversation, I encourage you to do what Andrew did. Recognize at the outset of your argument or at the outset of your facts that you can't prove it and you might be wrong, but you're pretty sure the following is the case. And you'll see how much more improved your conversations with others becomes.
Because that's not something like, you know, it wasn't like on C-SPAN they put the hashtag up, Devin Nunes is an idiot.
So if we eliminated political ads on Twitter, people would still be able to get ideas promulgated throughout the Twitterverse by obtaining a groundswell of support the way they did with this Devin Nunes is an idiot hashtag, right?
Yeah, I would say I think 50% of ideas would be able to get out that way. And my response to that is, though, is that when AOC is trying to raise money on a grassroots position and she's saying, hey, sign up for my email list, and she's promoting it,
mm-hmm.
Like that's where this gets complicated to some degree.
Yeah. Are you concerned about a scenario where something like the idea or the hashtag Devin Nunes is an idiot is, let's say, the national sentiment in a particular afternoon, but instead a really rich company with deep pockets comes in and says, we want the opposite trending right now. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to sink $500 million into the most ridiculous ad campaign ever on Twitter so that the exact opposite hashtag starts trending right now in contravention of the national opinion. And so they do it. They drop this huge bucket of money on this advertising campaign, and they, through corporate advertising dollars, gets the exact opposite of the national sentiment trending at the moment. Are you concerned about that?
I'm concerned about even with that hashtag of Devin Nunes, is that did corporate money come in? Because there's corporate money on both sides of the aisle. I'm very concerned that did ExxonMobil do something or did Apple do something? The country right now is very divided. So I don't think that Devin Nunes is an idiot is the national sentiment.
You don't think for an afternoon it was?
I don't. I think half the country thinks he's standing up for being a fighter. And I think half the country is like, He called a colonel a sir. He referred to a top military officer as just a regular civilian while he was wearing his uniform, which was an idiotic move. I'm the first person to say it, but I think that there's so much hatred in politics right now that I don't think that was the national sentiment. It's concerning when people can spend a lot of money to change things, and that's what, in many ways, 2016 was about.
Are you concerned about those things?
Oh, absolutely. But the way I view it is that instead of damming up positions, we should let it flood out, and then we should watch the flood.
Well, what happens when corporations can buy these political advertisements and make people appear more competent or more popular than they actually are by flooding feeds with advertisements for those candidates?
They're doing it right now.
Are you concerned about that?
What I'm concerned about is that I don't mind them doing it if it's completely transparent. I would much rather have Twitter have a complete transparent policy of saying it's going to be the Wild West, but every corporation's name is going to be attached to it. Hmm. And I take this same position with Citizens United, because money is like water. And obviously, money's being used to create a product to change an opinion. So money's going to find a way around it. If you build a dam, water's going to find the easiest path to go down. People are just going to get shadier. I think there's going to be less watching. I think that you're going to have a company that looks like it's a liberal company and it's completely undermining democracy. So When ExxonMobil advertises on Twitter, I know ExxonMobil's advertising on Twitter.
But that's not currently the way it is.
It's clear when a company advertises on Twitter, not politically, to, you know, go on a carnival
cruise. Not politically, for sure. Looking at the Facebook context, if a company buys an ad, you're not going to know that the company bought that ad for that political candidate on Facebook right now, right? You're just going to see the ad for the political candidate.
Yeah.
So isn't that the same concern with Twitter, that you just have this environment where companies are flooding the medium with ads for candidates and they're not disclosing which company purchased those ads?
So I think to some degree they do have to disclose certain things. I think with candidacy ads, they have to disclose it in FEC filings.
Okay. So, at the end of the ad, it'll say paid for by friends of whoever.
Yeah. If all of a sudden all of this was crystal clear and the ad was like, it was paid for by the CEO of Target, Here's what happens next is that if he supported a major Republican, a bunch of Democrats are not shopping at Target anymore.
Sure.
Basically, that becomes a feedback loop. And so a lot of corporations stay out of governance or they donate to both sides equally so that they don't piss off anybody. And so I'm not saying it's not a problem. I just think things are just going to become shadier.
Yeah.
I think if you ban ads, things become shadier. And I think that corporations will find new ways that I get around it. I could go create a Facebook group and I could go figure out how to rally 15,000 people to send $15 to Bernie Sanders. And if I throw out something, I could raise a lot of money on a grassroots component that way, or I could raise a lot more money and do the exact same thing that an ad could do.
Right.
For
but
free.
In the first scenario, you have to actually sell people on an idea, right? They actually have to get on board with your idea because you put out good reasons that they should vote for Bernie Sanders. Whereas in the second scenario, all you have to do is have really deep pockets. So isn't Twitter saying through this ban, we're not interested in you if you have deep pockets. We're interested in you if you have really good ideas that you can sell other people.
I mean, to some degree, I guess.
Isn't that a useful thing for our democracy?
It is. It is to some degree. But they're also saying to incumbents through this, saying, well, you don't have deeper pockets, and we just took a cheap way for you to build an email list out. So in many ways, this is also another problem, is that they're basically saying, if you make it and you figure out a way how to get into office, now you're safe on Twitter. There's no political ads allowed. Right. So now you don't have Twitter as a tool. You can express ideas. You could say, hey, you know, this is my fundraiser, but you can't promote it. You can't push it. You can't increase the reach on Twitter.
Doesn't that mean you have to have better ideas?
But I don't think better ideas are going to work.
You don't think better ideas trend?
I think ads do better. I think better ideas in a debate work. I think better ideas in when you're outlining policy, you're on Morning Joe work. I don't think on Twitter when I'm just side-scrolling. And I side-scroll on Twitter, and here's the thing. I look at a pretty picture because I'm trying to find somebody cool to interview. I'm sold on what's flashy.
Yeah.
You know, or says, hey, sign up, you know, we're going to do A, B, C, and D, and then it's, or it's like a 15-second video, and now that's completely taken out of the market. My idea isn't completely foolproof, and I'm not trying to say that there aren't holes in it. I just think that there's so many problems with banning it. And then the other side, which is now what is their issue advocacy? So if I say, hey, let's plant trees, is that political?
Right, that's a good question. Someone's got to be the judge and the arbiter and make that call.
There's a Sunoco commercial that's on YouTube saying, hey, if you buy two Gatorades, you get 5 cents off your gas. Is that political? You know, and Twitter doesn't have the best record of that. And that's a massive concern because if Sunoco says, hey, if you buy a bag of Doritos and a Gatorade, you get 5% off your gas per gallon. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. But is that political? Is planting trees in the rainforest political? The biggest concern is that Twitter hasn't outlined this effectively. They've double-taked, and they almost need somebody to just simplify it and put it in layman terms.
Sure. And let me ask you, do you think poor enforcement guidelines or poor enforcement strategies is a reason not to roll out a new policy?
I don't think that it's a reason not to, but I think that if you don't have the best track record, you got to come out and you got to say, look, we know we messed up in the past and that we've made some poor choices and that there's been very good documentation on this. Here's how we're going to make this better. If you're going to roll something out and you know you just have a shitty, for lack of a better word, track record, you got to roll out a better track record plan. Mm-hmm. The idea is that they're not the best enforcers of it. And it's very concerning because they're going to make those mistakes, and those mistakes can be very costly.
Even if the enforcement can't be ideal right away, though, isn't getting started now better than nothing? If it's a sort of a goal worth attaining?
Yeah, see, I just think that their enforcement is never going to be 100%. I think their enforcement is going to be a nightmare. I mean, it's been well documented, and Twitter has backtracked, that they have treated conservative people very poorly. Twitter's gotten better. I just don't have much faith, because getting better, and maybe they got them better by 7%, but it's like you need to have leaps and bounds before I feel comfortable with what they're doing.
Let me switch gears a little bit and address, you said that we're sort of living in a particularly polarized time right now where people have really strong opinions that they are freely asserting on Twitter. And I guess I'm curious for your opinion on if it's the case that banning political ads on Twitter would maybe decrease some of the vitriol between people of opposing parties on Twitter. Would that be a good thing?
I don't think it's going to have any effect. I don't think that the political ads are the problem of why people hate each other and both parties. I think what it is that I think that's just not going to have an effect either way.
You don't think ads casting certain characters in certain lights and saying that certain characters have said things, you don't think that affects people's opinions and feelings about certain candidates?
Maybe 10 years ago, honestly. I think the problem here is that I think people, you just hate Donald Trump. They hate the Republican Party. They hate what the Republicans are doing. There's this stuff saying the extreme right and leftists. I don't remember 6 years ago those terms being in our dictionaries. I hear leftists and I hear rightists or extreme right. And I didn't even know what a leftist was until 4 years ago. I never heard that term. And so I don't think that, and I've never seen one of those in a political ad. And not saying they don't exist, but I don't think the political ads are the problem on that. I think people just really hate the other side. And I think that people need to actually get off Twitter and have a beer with somebody from the other side and say, oh my God, I didn't know you liked TV too. Oh my God, we share the same football team. When you're on Twitter, it's an echo chamber of your idea. When you're with another person, it's hard to tell them to go screw themselves. I mean, I could legitimately type 4 letters on my keyboard to anybody in the world right now, and I could do it without even a second thought.
Facebook executives were asked about politicians running ads on their platforms, and Facebook said, yeah, no problem with that. And, even if politicians lied in their ads, we're fine with that. Like, we're not going to stop them. Isn't that problematic? Or are you simply saying, like, it's not problematic because people are just going to do it in tweets anyway, and that ads are no more powerful than tweets? Like, is that your position?
I agree that ads are just as powerful as tweets. I just think that's going to happen either way. So if it's happening in a tweet or it's happening in an ad, I don't have a problem with the lie. That doesn't bother me so much because it's going to happen either way and people are going to lie about people, and it's been happening for decades. If you go on Facebook and you got ads, you can comment on ads that tell lies. I mean, there's both sides debating it.
If we can agree that there's like ads on both sides where people are lying, then by eliminating ads, aren't we eliminating more places where people are lying?
I mean, I guess. But at the same time, if it's not going to be online, it's going to be on TV. If it's not going to be on TV, it's going to be in a newspaper. If it's not going to be there, it's going to be on a podcast. And so the thing is that if we just get rid of it, it's going to appear somewhere else. It's going to go to the path of least resistance.
So that sounds like the argument, money is like water. It always finds a way.
It's going to find a way and it's going to break through. And so the question becomes is that are we building essentially a stream to divert it somewhere? Or are we actually going to just say what Facebook did is say, look, we're going to watch it and you just have to be an educated consumer? These are perfectly reasonable discussions. I think that's the heart of the entire point is that what do we want in society?
Sure.
And there's valid points on both sides because lying is not good. I don't want to lie. I don't want people to lie. In a perfect utopia, politicians wouldn't lie, but they're going to lie. And the question is, how do we monitor all of this, and how do we monitor our democracy, and how do we ensure the most democracy?
So let me ask you this. I mean, just on the topic of trying not to erect barriers because money is always going to find a way, is there any content that you think does not belong on Twitter? Is there any content that you think Twitter is justified in saying, not on our platform?
I mean, I think Twitter has a right to remove any content.
Not what they have a right to, but what you think is a good idea for them to remove.
You know what it is?
Any content you think that it's a good idea for Twitter to remove?
I mean, I think having adult Twitter is good, meaning that I think having 18-plus accounts is reasonable.
Isn't it the case that every Twitter account requires you to say that you're 18 years old?
I don't know about that. As far as what I think Twitter should monitor is that I think, you know, calling for acts of violence against people, because that's a crime. You know, that's not freedom of speech by any definition. If I call to murder you and I say, hey, he lives here, somebody kill him, I think death threats should be investigated. I think they should be removed. I think they should be archived before they're removed. I don't want hatred on Twitter.
Having had a chance to sort of have this conversation and, you know, hear all my questions, has your opinion changed in any way from when we first set up on this topic?
My opinion has changed where I recognize there's a problem, and I walked in realizing there was a problem, and I know that not everything I stated is an answer to the problem. But again, I'm like 60 or 70-30, and I might be more like 65-35, where I get that creating a nicer environment to what Twitter was back in like 2006-2008 would be better. Because Twitter was fun during 2008-2010, and Twitter has become unfun in the last 6 or 7 years. So yeah, my opinion has changed because I recognize that it's not a perfect argument. And that's something that I really want to convey. There are pluses and minuses to what Twitter is doing.
I really want to tip my hat to Andrew here for his honesty and sincerity in answering this final question. It's the same one I posed to all my guests. Has your opinion changed as a result of this back and forth, this cross-exam? And I really love the way Andrew approached this, saying, I recognize that when I came in, I still was, you know, open to having my mind changed, and it's changed somewhat. And I recognize that I don't have a perfect argument. I think that more times than not in conversation with others, if we can take a step back and say, you know, I did my best in this conversation, but I recognize I didn't bring a perfect argument. Everything I said isn't airtight. We might have more room to understand the perspective of the other side, and we might find ourselves advancing our own ideas more effectively by both listening to the other side and presenting the kind of perspective that someone's more inclined to hear, and they hear that honesty and sincerity behind it. So nice job to Andrew. Now let's wrap up this cross-exam. Okay, well, I really appreciate your intellectual honesty on that point, and thanks for clarifying that, and thanks for answering all my questions as thoughtfully as you did. I wanted to give you a chance to maybe give our listeners a little bit of an idea about your background, maybe the name of your podcast, and how they can find you online.
I started out on YouTube, created a website called popanimecomics.com, where I write about anime, comics, and pop culture. I am actually very apolitical. I don't really discuss politics. I like politics. I work in politics, but I don't do anything relating to politics as far as my website. I'm just writing about anime, comics, and pop culture because those are my hobbies. And then I created a podcast called the Pop Anime Comics Lounge, where I interview voice actors, comic artists, writers, cosplayers, and professional wrestlers. And then if you want to find my social media, Google Pop Anime Comics and it'll come up, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, SoundCloud, iTunes, because I'm on all those. My website will come up. My Twitter will come up. That's at Pop Anime Comics. Don't worry, I'm not banned yet because I haven't done any ads. So that's everything I got.
Great. Well, Andrew, again, thank you so much for coming on Cross Examine Life. I really appreciate your time. And this has been a wonderful experience.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now it's time for Practical Takeaway Tips, the part of the show where we give you tips that you can use during your next controversial conversation. Today we have just two, and the first is use phrases like, I can't prove this, and I may be wrong, before asserting your fact or conclusion, since it's possible there could be a flaw in the building blocks of your argument or a small piece of evidence that's still lacking. You'll be amazed at how far this humility can take the conversation. Second tip is to acknowledge that you don't always have a perfect argument, one that's airtight. Watch then in amazement as your conversation partner becomes even more willing to hear what it is you have to say when they hear that you may not be so doggedly tied to your position. So what'd you think of today's cross-exam? Join our Facebook group, the Cross-Examine Life Community, to let other listeners know. There, you can find summaries of Andrew's argument and ongoing discussion about whether or not he proved his point. Well, that'll about do it for today's cross-exams. If you enjoyed them, please leave us a rating in the iTunes store and mention this show next time you're swapping podcast recommendations with friends.
Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what we're doing here, find more of our questions on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to propose a topic or sign up to be a guest, please visit us at crossexaminedlife.com.